What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL Live, joined as always by my main man, Jonathan Holder. Jonathan, what's going on, brother?
Man, it is another beautiful day. Luckily, the yard guy has moved away from my window, so just perfect timing.
Yeah, well, I mean, so, he knew what was going on. You know, he knew what was up.
Yep. But yeah, no, it's been a great day, and got some Falcons stuff to talk about, and we're a little under 2 weeks until the draft. It's an exciting time.
Yeah, I'm about to say we are about a week and 2 days, from the first round of the NFL draft off. Yeah. And it's getting real. You know what I'm saying? We got the guys in the building for OTAs. You know, you're getting a handful of things like kind of popping off. So I guess without further ado, we might as well just get into it. All right, man. So everybody wants to know what is popping? What is popping? That's what Mr. Tony Wright was saying. And initially, right off the bat, we're going to talk about the fact that it is OTAs. OTAs started yesterday. We got to see, you know, a lot of the new faces come into the building. You got to see, like, Jesse Bates. It was not a dream. he was, pumping iron in the Atlanta Falcons weight room, along with, a reinvigorated, I guess you could say, or newly invigorated QB1 Desmond Ridder walking into the building. So it was good to see those guys doing their, early spring workouts. Obviously, we're not going to be able to garner too much off of OTAs other than, seeing – the guys come into the building, Grady Jarrett with his little signature smirk going on. So it was good to see, to have the team have something to put out there, like social media wise kind of thing.
Yeah. Had that. They've been slow drip feeding us the numbers, the new numbers, some cases, mostly they've been doing it for a lot of the newer guys. Though today we did get a couple of folks from last year. We got their number changes. Mm-hmm. Got the first zero.
Right. Yep. Zoe Carter with the number zero. Like I saw people on Twitter already grabbing that one in a sense. Yeah, Zoe. when it got announced that Ridder went to back to his college number 9. So I kind of made a statement saying that the Falcons so aren't going to take a quarterback because they're just they're hyping up Ridder so much. Now, I say that in jest, fully knowing that the social media team has nothing to do with the front office and vice versa. They don't have any kind of inside scoops, nothing like that. But I do think it's funny that, they're putting all these graphics and stuff together with, Lorenzo, his number changing to 0 and Ridder's number going from 4 to 9, getting the fan base pumped up about it. And I do think it's kind of funny. Tony Rice says 9 days until the number 1 draft. Now he goes on to talk about the draft day movie, but 9 days until the draft and Ridder, announces that he's switching to number 9. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yep. And it looks good on him. And, he had Lindstrom had their first press conferences today as well. Right. And I really liked his answer when somebody was like, what do you think of, did you hear any of the stuff about everybody talking about the Falcons quarterback room has, a dearth of talent and they need to go get a guy and this and that and the other. And his response was like, I have a TV in my house. So yeah, I heard it, it puts a chip on my shoulder, but I'm just going to go out here and do the best I can. And it's like, I really hope everything we've heard about this guy to this point is he's worked for everything that he's gotten.
Right.
Like he didn't come into Cincinnati as the starter, the heir apparent. He had to work to, you know, to get there. And, you know, he's just been nothing but the hardest worker. We heard Terry talk about, like, so I asked him, like, have you reached out to Ritter? Like, what's he doing? He's like, every time I talk to that kid, that he's working on something.
Yep.
So he's, you know, feels like he's hungry. If he can use the media slighting him essentially as motivation, you do whatever you got to do. Like Tom Brady, 20 years into his career, was still looking for anything he could to give him that edge.
Still acting like an underdog.
Yes. Always acting like an underdog.
Always acting like an underdog.
No matter how many Super Bowls that man wins, he's always going to feel like somebody doesn't believe in me. I got to make him. I'm going to make him believe in me. And that's hopefully what we're going to get out of Ritter. Even if he really believes that, doesn't mean that he's going to do it, but it can't hurt if he's having that kind of mentality. So,
and the thing, you know, with Ritter, and we've talked about it to death over the offseason, and depending on what they do in the draft, we'll probably continue talking about it, is that he possesses all the intangibles that you want out of a player. He's definitely got it in between the ears as far as like being able to pick up the playbook and, you know, understand this, you know, schematics and things like that. He seems to be a natural leader. So which is a great thing. And, you know, the guys tend to seem like they want to rally around him. So now you just got to hope that the talent can meet the intangibles, you know, in a traits driven league, as we saw last year with the taking of Tavon Walker, number one overall. And this year, a guy like, or, you know, guys like Anthony Richardson and Will Levis, you know, probably going to get taken in the first round. Like, this is a traits driven league. And there's arguments to be made that, Ritter doesn't possess all the traits.
I think, you know, not to cut you off, but I think the biggest difference in today's NFL is I think it took them a while to kind of come around to it, but they, I think that more front offices and more coaches finally actually understand that when you get guys coming out of the college ranks these days, it's the same basic game, but like how they play, how they game plan, how, you know, all those things, like they don't do the same things that the NFL does.
Right.
Even in a simplified form, some of the stuff they do so you got some positions that are much more translatable easily to the NFL, but a lot of the positions, whether you're talking about offensive line, they don't do nearly as much. Depending on the school, they don't do nearly as much pass blocking. They do much more run blocking. So they're better run blockers coming out of college than they are pass blockers. So they got to teach them that. Quarterbacks are not used to looking at complicated zone defenses or complicated multi defenses that's got zone over here and man over there. They're not used to seeing that. There's 9 times out of 10, they're probably used to seeing a much more of a man coverage type front outside of some of the really good defenses.
Yeah, I'm about to say you got like the more complicated systems like the Dave Aranda out there at Baylor or Gary Patterson back in the day at TCU. There's a lot more, you know, complicated systems out there. Now the front play, you know, Georgia and Alabama tend to be the cutting edge as far as like front seven play goes. Hence that you see those guys get drafted, you know, quite a bit and tend to be pretty high. But yeah, you're right. For the vast majority of you're either a zone team or a man team with a lot of man coverages. So
yeah, and so what coaches have finally, and just organizations I think have finally come around to, and the reason why they value those traits over somebody that's not necessarily over somebody that maybe doesn't have the traits, but they showed some, they played really good in college, just don't have those traits, is they're much more willing to actually teach, in the NFL. It used to be is like, you come in, it's like, okay, this is your job now. It's like, you got to do the work. We're not going to do it for you. And so some guys would come in and they could get it, and some guys couldn't. And you still have that, but you're much more likely to get a guy like a Trayvon Walker, like a Will Levis, like a Richardson, because they have the God-given stuff.
Yeah, I'm about to say the things you can't teach.
Right. They have all of that, and they're like, we'll teach you to be what we want you to be. Hmm. And I think that's the reason why you see a lot of offensive linemen, especially offensive linemen, that can go anywhere from the first round all the way to the seventh round that could be all pros. Some of them may catch on quicker, but usually it takes 2 to 3 years to really come around as an offensive lineman in the NFL. That's why I'm hopeful for Caleb McGarry. Maybe it took him an extra year over that.
But he's finally turned the corner.
Maybe he's finally turned that corner.
Right.
And we saw that man pumping some iron in that weight room. I'm excited. I'm so excited. Yeah,
no doubt. I like, you know, right now, like, the excitement's high. You know, you're getting the OTA stuff. You're getting closer to the draft. We're starting to see the guys in the building. Like, you know, it's starting to get, you know, a little more intriguing than what has been in the past. Now, before OTA started, the Atlanta Falcons brought in more pass rush help. Terrence Mathis on, I don't remember the name of the YouTube channel.
I don't remember it either, but I remember seeing it.
Anyway, yeah. You know, he come out and was like, oh, you know, big news. The Falcons are approaching, like, signing a veteran pass rusher. And that, of course, got the Twitterverse going. And oh, who could be, you know, could it be Yannick? Could it be, Frank Clark? Could it be, and turned out to be Bud Dupree. And it's not that that is a bad thing, but, you know, Bud Dupree has been often injured, has had one double-digit sack season, and hasn't been
close
been,
another time.
Yeah, he got close. He had a two-year span where he was, false start. It was Atlanta Sports Unlimited. What was the name of the show? Thank you, false. Anyway, he signed a really big deal in Tennessee, and 2 years into that, didn't live up to it. Like, it was a 5-year, $85 million contract. And 2 years in, injured, and just couldn't live up to it. Now he gets to come here on a 1-year, you know, prove it deal to try to, like, restart his career. But I mean, when I say restart, I mean, he's a 30-year-old pass rusher. Now, granted, that's still 7 years younger than Calais Campbell, but Calais Campbell, different story as far as, like, his consistency over the year. Bud Dupree came out the same year Vic Beasley came out. I think he was over at the house on that draft night.
I might have been, yeah.
And I think we was, like, wanting Bud Dupree because we didn't think there was any way we were going to get Beasley. And then, you know, Dupree goes before Beasley, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that. Beasley was still there, and we picked him. Anyway, because Dupree went later on.
I'm so excited for that, man.
Oh, yeah, that turned out to be such a bust. But anywho, not going to go down that, you know, rabbit hole. But Bud Dupree is a guy who still has some good years left in him. If he can stay healthy, we can see if he can be a productive player. Well, like I said, we'll see. You know, Chris is saying Bud Dupree turned down a 2-year offer from Pittsburgh to come to Atlanta, and I didn't see that.
Yeah, it was Daniel Flick did an article, SI article, and he basically talked to Bud Dupree, and he said he had a 2-year contract from Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh didn't want to offer a one. They wanted to offer him a two. He wanted a one. And so when Pittsburgh didn't offer him the 1-year contract, he came to Atlanta, signed the contract with us, obviously, because he wanted the 1-year contract to do specifically what you talked about, which is come in, try to show that he still got it, can go, but it can get another bite at the apple in less than 2 years. to in the free agent market to try to get more money. So like I'm excited because again, yeah, he was injured. And so he kind of hasn't really, you know, it's maybe taken him a little longer to kind of get back on track from his injury. I'm hoping maybe we're, you know, kind of like with Jeff Okuda, you know, you look at last year, Jeff Okuda, he was probably his best year as a pro. And then now that's not necessarily the case for Bud Dupree, but he's had a couple seasons now. He's going to come to Atlanta. He's going to have plenty of talent around him. You know, he doesn't have to be the guy. He just has to be a guy that produces enough to get a good third contract.
No, yeah, you're 100% right. I completely agree. Now, kind of curtailing off of that, King asks a really good question here. He says, a quick question. Thank you for raising your hand there, King. I think Ryan, talking about Ryan Nielsen, is a 4-3 guy, if I'm not mistaken. But how is it looking? Are any rumors that we're going to be mainly a 3-4 defense? Now, I want to – the reason why I pulled that, not necessarily because – well, okay. I think we're making a lot of assumptions about Ryan Nielsen.
Yeah.
And which is the only thing we can do. Okay. Just like with Arthur Smith, when he first came from Tennessee, we made a lot of assumptions about how he would want to build this team. There's still being a lot of assumptions made. Like, I know we're going into year three, but I really feel like this is the first year that they've had a chance to really build the team the way they wanted to. And so it's going to be interesting to see how it is going forward. Everybody that wants to say Arthur Smith is like predominantly run heavy, like I challenge you to just to go back and look at, you know, the first year he was here, he had an offense that was more curtailed to the roster that he had. When he was in Tennessee, he wasn't necessarily run heavy. He was very balanced. I think that he is striving for more balance than he is one way heavy or the other. But anyway, you were asking about Nielsen. How that relates to Nielsen is we don't exactly know what he wants to run. Like, is it a deal where when he came in and was talking to him, like, hey, look, we've already started down this 3-4 path with Pease in his base. Like, can you kind of keep that hybrid? Because that's the one thing that we've heard them say. They want to be a multiple front, a hybrid defense. Yep. Us fans are the ones who get locked into the 4-3, 3-4, what's the scheme when, what you got there?
Yeah, it's like I basically want to fill the defense with multiple types of guys so they can play whatever front that's needed based on the opposing offenses.
Right.
We haven't had the depth of the last 2 years. Absolutely. Like, I think that if you don't do, if you're not able to or don't do that, then you pigeonhole yourself into a certain defense. And if for whatever reason the opposing offense just has your number and you want to try to change things up, now you're putting guys in positions where they're not at their best point for success.
That, and that's the thing is it's the ability to be able to attack an offense how you need to attack it, you know. And somebody, I can't find the comment now. Okay, here it is. It was Bubba Gump. It says defenses are primarily nickel. This is a very true statement. I feel like we have been saying this for a few years now. It's not just us that say it, like everybody says it, you know, even the coaches say it, but us as fans, we want things simplified in ways that we can understand or the ways that we're familiar with. And 3-4 and 4-3 is what we are familiar with. When in all reality, the vast majority of the time, you're going to be in a 4-2-5. Now, the spin and the tip off that we might have in as far as what we're going to try to run is might be what is more labeled as the big nickel, meaning three safeties. And the reason why I say that is because Terry Fontenot talked about the nickel player being a starter. And then he, from the podium, brought up the term big nickel as a safety or even another linebacker or what have you. And then he, if you look at who they've been talking to, you know, far as pre-draft wise, they've been talking to a lot of safeties. And you say, well, why are they talking to safeties when they just brought in arguably the best safety in free agency? Well, it's probably because they're going to be playing a lot more three safety looks. So that's something that I hope to, you know, have some more information and better information as the summer goes along. I'm going to try to get some experts in to talk about that one.
And I think you're going to see 3-4 looks. You're going to see, because Eddie Goldman, that's going to be your nose tackle. That's going to be right. He's 325. He's going to be your big guy in the middle. Then you're going to be flanked by either Grady and Onyemata, or Grady and Calais, or Calais and Onyemata, or whatever. They're gonna bring those guys in. And then when you're in obvious pass rushing downs, you're probably going to see a front that looks like Grady and Onyemata in the middle, Calais on one side, and then one of Carter, Ebiketie, Malone, maybe a draft pick if we go with a pass rusher. Right. That's going to be on the other side. And I think that's going to be your pass rush package is those four guys. So.
Yeah, no, I think I tend to agree that you're going to have, and then depending on who you pick, if you go with a guy like Van Ness or somebody who's a versatile, bigger D lineman, him or Wilson, you know, you could possibly see like a NASCAR package of like Grady Jarrett and whoever that rookie pass rusher is, with Carter and Ebiketie or what have you, whatever. Aspect thinks that they're going to get home. Tony says, also, does this mean that Caden Ellis will start at inside linebacker next to Troy Anderson with Walker as one of the backups? And in the draft, will we get another linebacker? Maybe with one of the two fourth rounders. The draft thing is very possible. The Caden Ellis has been an interesting, like trying to figure out what we're going to do with Caden Ellis has been very interesting because he played a good bit of time on the line and at New Orleans. And so I would imagine the guy who, figured out how to use him more or less would continue to do some of the same things, but then makes it like Fred here talks about Nolan Smith will be the pick at 8. That makes Nolan Smith the pick, if that's the pick, a very interesting pick. Because it almost becomes slightly redundant. If Caden Ellis's, best asset is being on the line and being able to rush, and if Nolan Smith is considered one of the more explosive edge rushers in this draft, like, are you going to line up them opposite each other? Neither one of them are really big enough to set the edge. Like, yeah. It's just like that's been one of the last few days I've been really trying to figure out. If you do go the route of Nolan Smith, how do you go about using it? Like, does he just start as a designated pass rusher, or are you just going to play him as a Sam linebacker?
I mean, I think it depends on what down distance, things like that. I think if we're talking like obvious pass situations, then you can probably play him either or. Running situations, he's probably more of an inside linebacker. He's not going to be a guy you want setting the edge. You're going to be
right.
The hope would be is he's a guy that you allow to run free, go plug holes, things like that, that are and is kept clean by our front.
Right.
Would be the hope. But I think you should get back into like third and 10, third and 15 kind of situations. The good thing about him is he gives you, that flexibility because he can come from the outside. He can come from the inside. He could do, he's really, he's good on stunts and twists and games and, all that stuff. So giving you that flexibility of not knowing exactly where he's going to be coming from, where exactly he's going to line up. He's a guy you got to, know where he's at so you can make sure you're blocking him. Those kinds of things. And that sounds like the perfect situation where you have him and Troy Anderson as your two linebackers in an obvious nickel, like 3 or 4 probably a 3 DB kind of situation. Troy Anderson's a really good blitzer as well. So you could mug both those guys up, and you can't really be like, well, he's a better blitzer than he is. Right. They're both, fast. They're both big and strong. So they both are kind of in that same mold. And they can both do it from inside, outside, twists, all that kind of stuff. So the potential is there for just a lot of variability in how we go about rushing the passer.
Yeah. Millie Mill says that at the same time, JR, what are we going to do about Mykel Walker if we get Nolan Smith? Mykel probably end up riding the bench. I mean, I hate to say it like that. If you go Nolan Smith and you have Caden Ellis and Troy Anderson, I think at that point in time, Mykel Walker just becomes depth, and he becomes a core special teamer. And if he can carve out usefulness that way, if not, at the end of this season when his contract's up, you let him walk,
Yeah.
Because right now he's been way too inconsistent in his play, which is really sad, because the year he came out, I felt like he could have been a poor man's Isaiah Simmons, very versatile player, but maybe that versatility didn't allow him to hone in one way or the other. And of course, a regime change didn't necessarily help.
Right. And it's also possible we could be seeing, let's see what happens through training camp and OTAs and stuff like that. But this will be his second regime change since he was drafted. Maybe this particular coaching staff can get more out of him.
Right. Chris says, I personally down with Lucas Van Ness or Skorinski unless someone falls, but I think all this, all the trades at the front of the draft is just smoke. Possibly on that part of it. Now, I wanted to touch on Skoronski for a second, because Tony also says if he's available, Tyree Wilson should be the pick. If not, draft the left tackle, left guard Skoronski with the 8th overall selection. Skoronski is a guy that Skoronski reminds me of chicken soup, or somebody
I
called
love
him
chicken soup.
Right, somebody called him custard earlier. I will not be mad, but at the 8th overall pick, you want a head turner. Somebody that even Chris Lindstrom was the 13th pick when we had that. Yeah. Even that was borderline okay, I'm glad we got him, and I'm glad we got him, But at the 8th pick, it's man, you want, but hold on, let me finish out my full thought. And then, but say you plug him in at left guard, right? Because that's what everybody's saying. He's got two shorter arms, yada, yada, yada. If you pick him, he's a guard. So let's say you plug him in at left guard, and Lindstrom, he's your left guard for the next 10 years. Ain't nobody going to be upset, So, and, Jay says, I need somebody who can make an impact, day one or impact year one at 8. I'll say this, if he comes in and solidifies that left guard position, then, and you ain't got to worry about that no more, then guess what? That's impact, especially if we are going to be a run-heavy, run-focused team with a young quarterback. That's impact. I'm not going to diminish it.
Yeah, and it's, I will probably say, and some, people are probably going to disagree with this. Right now, while it's not a sexy pick, probably the absolute safest pick, while having the smallest degree of being a bust, that you could pick at 8 on day one and be and expect it to be a good thing for your team and be contributing day one, if not minute one, is probably Skoronski. And just exactly like you said, I saw this on Twitter today. People were frowny facing it and all this other stuff. I'm like, look, if we, is he the sexy pick? No. Is he the head turner? No. But the trickle down effect of getting a Skoronski, and he pans out the way almost everybody thinks he's going to. And, you know, if it's another Lindstrom, everybody thought he was going to be great as well. He turned out to be great.
Right.
This guy, everybody, nobody has any illusions that this guy can't play. He's about as plug and play as you get. You put him in there and it's like, yeah, I'm going to be a little like, okay, we didn't get Tyree. We didn't get Jalen. We didn't even get Bijan. You know, we didn't get the high powered this and that and the other. But what I just think in the back of my head, I just started thinking, I'm like, we are going to mash the hell out of some people.
Oh, yeah.
And that makes me excited, because that trickle down is he comes in, he's a better pass blocker already than who we had last year. He's a better run blocker than who we had last year. Plug him in. Now the run, you know, last year we got most of our really good runs, a lot of our really good runs off the right side. We got some off the left. We got a lot off that right side. If you can now do it to where you can pull off those big chunk plays, can go either way. And you have better pass protection that allows your young quarterback that when you do ask him to drop back and pass, he has a much cleaner pocket. He has much more time. He's able to go through his progressions properly, find the right guy, get him the ball. And on top of that, we saw the stats for last year with regards to on target percentages.
Right, 75.
It was like 75.4% or something like that.
The only one that had any higher was Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah. And so, and everybody's like, well, how many games did he play? I was like, that's why you use a percentage. You know, you use a percentage to give you an idea, even with a smaller sample size, of the whole, right?
Yep.
And if he keeps that up, you know, and he can throw 75%, 73, 74, 75%. If he can stay at that right around 75%, with a better offensive line, with more weapons than he had last year, with more talent coming in from the draft, like that's just going to make the rest of this offense just go so much better.
Yep. Real quick, Fred, I'm going to go ahead and call it, bro. You've been popping into these chats and hanging out with us for years now. You know damn good and well that I watch tape. I probably watch more tape than the vast majority of your people who do sit here and talk on YouTube. Like, straight up. Normally, I will not, like, you know, I don't run my mouth about things that I'm unsure about. I will tell you straight up and down when I don't have the knowledge that I'm claiming to have. Go watch that secondary video me and Jonathan did. Like, I make no bones about the things that I'm unsure about. And I'll tell you this right now, in college is a whole different beast than in the NFL. And a 230-pound edge rusher, he is not going to be able to set a solid edge on a consistent basis at the NFL level. Yep. Straight up now, not going to be able to do it. You go and watch Georgia, as you so claim I didn't do or I haven't done, and you will see the vast majority of his production doesn't come necessarily off the line. They run stunts. They run shifts. They do a lot of things to get their edge rushers to the quarterback. And if he, all that being said, he also had 3.5 sacks last year. Less than that the year before. He's more of a linebacker who you can use rushing and blitzing. And that's fine. I do appreciate the $5. Hold on.
Absolutely.
Got something for you. Hold tight. Got to get to it. Bam. Bam. You say he's a beast and he can set the edge and is explosive. I don't know, dog. The explosive part, I'll give you all day long. The dude is explosive. Cutting, like, chasing down screenplays, knifing through the defense to, like, you know, cut down, like, stretch plays, things like that, does wonderfully. Like, but as far as just setting a hard edge that you want a top 10 edge rusher to do. Like, that's one of the reasons why you felt okay about taking Trayvon Walker at number one overall. He had the size to handle the edge.
Like, setting the edge against college, and 90% of them are not going to – 95% of the college kids you play against, you're not going to face in the NFL. Okay? But setting the edge against tackles in the NFL or in college, way different. Like 230 pounds going up against Tyron Smith.
I was sitting here thinking of Trent Williams.
Williams. Yeah. I mean, pick any of left the top 15 tackles in the league, and they're all going to be right at 300 pounds or bigger. And they're all going to run really well for guys their size. And they're all strong as an ox, as strong as he is, if not stronger. And they're going to and he's going to give up 70 pounds
right
to those guys on top of that.
I'm not saying that he can't succeed. And I'm not saying he ain't going to be a good player. It's going to take a lot more for him. Like, if you want to tell me that you're going to play him more in more of a Micah Parsons type role, which where he's, you know, more of that, you know, mugged up in the middle of the, you know, line trying to knife between, you know, the guard and the center, you know, or coming from a wide nine, you know, using his explosiveness to beat the left tackle or right tackle, or, you know, absolutely trying to get him one-on-ones against tight ends. Okay, maybe. But if you're talking about just straight up and down, like, I'm going to put him on the edge and ask him to set an edge? No. Not unless he gains 20, 30 pounds of – I mean, I get y'all. He's a J's and gets up to 255, 260. Right, but if he gets up to 265, 260, I know that NFL peanut butter is a magical thing. But is he still going to have that explosiveness? Right?
He could just get to 240, even 240 or 245. An extra 15 pounds would do a world of helping him to, you know, be closer to being able to set the edge. But yeah, 255, somewhere between 250, 260, somewhere in that range is about the minimum for a guy that you're like, he doesn't come off the field.
Right.
Like, he stays on the field, even in obvious run situations. Nolan Smith is not an obvious run situation guy.
Right.
No, at least not on the edge.
Yeah, maybe if they do the whole deal where, like, he comes in and in those plays, he drops back as more of a typical linebacker, maybe. Millie, no, he ain't make me mad. What I will, like, I ain't mad by any stretch of the imagination. My only thing is, like, I do kind of get, you know, a little urge when, like, you can have a different opinion than me. A lot of people do, and that's great. Like, I enjoy actually having differences of opinion. But to then come in and like I don't question whether y'all put the work in or whatever, you know, and I feel like when y'all come in here into this draft or in these chat rooms to chat with me and Jonathan or whoever else we have on is because you feel like, you know, we do put in the work to be educated. We're not just, you know, talking out our butts here. Like, you know, I have subscriptions to all 22s for almost every college out there, you know, that I sit here and just sit here and watch cutups after cutups after cutups of, you know, games and of players. I know I didn't do near the amount of write-ups that I did last year, but doesn't mean I didn't put in the quote-unquote wrench time. Fred says, if I'm wrong about Nolan, I'll tip you $100. You ain't got to tip me $100 or us at all. He said, y'all want Will Anderson. I never said anything about Will Anderson, as a matter of fact. He said, he's not that good and his weight's 240. Again, a concern I've had with Will Anderson. A concern I've also had with Will Anderson is not seeing him consistently beat a tackle.
Yeah.
So they use a lot of stunts and twists and knives and shifts and all that other jazz. What's going on, Damski? How are you doing, buddy?
What's up, Damski?
Glad you're in here this evening. All right. So anyway, we're going to move off of that. Like I said, I am not – look, if if Nolan's the pick, I'll take it all day long. I'll champion it. I'll cheer it on just like with anybody else. But as it stands, a little over a week out of the draft, I'm just not convinced that, I'm just curious of where we would play him.
Yeah.
Because putting him just directly on the edge and saying, have at it there, Gipper, and, go get him, Tiger, I think would be a recipe for disaster. And I don't discount anything that this regime might do. I say it a lot, and I'll say it again. They took a tight end at 4, so which is something you don't do. So taking a Sam linebacker at 8, so be it. It may not be my, my cup of tea, but.
Yeah, exactly. For all we know, Nielsen's in there pounding the table for the guy. We don't know. Exactly. We can just give what our opinions are of the pick.
I did give him a Gipper. you got to throw that in there every now and again. Okay, here we go. Attaboys, you're working out. John, you're working out. Listen to this. Be careful. Don't drop nothing. Don't strain. You know what I'm saying? You got to keep your good form, all that stuff. Josh Gilm says Bijan is the pick, to me. If you're going like best player available, it'd be hard to argue that he isn't. I think we've just about talked that one to death in a lot of aspects. But I would not be upset at all with Bijan, because you could technically, for a reasonable price, keep him around for 6 to 7 years. Depending on how much you wanted to pay, as far as if you wanted to pull in the franchise tag type stuff. But
and even in 5-6 years, unless something dramatically changes, the running back market is soft.
Oh yeah.
It's real soft right now, and the cap is going to potentially go up to 250 next year. There's all kinds of
the money space part
by the time we get to that point.
Right. Now, to Reggie's point, you can get a running back in the later rounds. Of course you can. Yeah. Straight up and down. And to that point, we had in another running back in for a visit now. I think that makes
Gray?
3. Yeah. Eric Gray out of Oklahoma came in for a visit. Real good shifty back. Got a lot of, I can guarantee you this. I said it on Twitter, and I'm going to hold my guns. We're not coming out of this draft without a speedier back, because they've looked at Keaton Mitchell. They've looked at Tajay Spears. They looked at Eric Gray. All those guys are faster guys than Tyler Allgeier. And if you go with, Bijan Robinson, who I think they've had a talk with or whatever, I don't know if he's been in on an official visit, but if they go with that, he's a faster back. So they are looking to add speed.
Yeah, they are. Josh here is we're a run heavy team, potential all pro running back moves the needle more than a potential all pro left guard. Yes and no. Yes, he moves the needle in that he's a splash move. He's that splash move of we got this guy, and it's very tangible and it turns heads. Some people it's going to turn heads. What are you doing taking running back at 8? Or if we trade back to 11 or 12 or something like that, and we still take him, some people would be like, you should have waited till the 20s, or you should have just waited till later, whatever. But that's going to turn heads one way or the other.
Yeah.
Bronski will turn heads because a lot of people are probably going to be like, he's really, really, he's good, but he's a left guard. What are you doing taking a left guard that early in the draft?
Right.
But you bring, like we talked about earlier, you bring in Skoronski, and then you bring in some guy, maybe you do Chardonnay later on. You do Tajay Spears later on. You do some of these other shiftier backs. Now you got your Thunder and Lightning, and you have, if things work out right, we got one of the best offensive lines in the league, especially run blocking.
Now all
those guys are going to look good.
Right. I'm about to say, think about Zeke Elliott when he first came in the league. He was behind that, almost impenetrable Dallas offensive line that had so many first round picks on it that they were blowing open holes that I could run through, not for as many yards, but yeah. I could make it through it. Probably
Emmitt Smith is a Hall of Famer because of that Dallas offensive line.
Well, we're talking about two different Dallas offensive lines. I'm talking about
I understand, but I'm saying yeah. the Dallas offensive okay, line yeah. he had
right.
at the time, and it was a different era, so they were able to keep those guys together for a lot longer. Yep. But those guys, that line he had was so great. Like Emmitt Smith, if he had been behind just about like a league average line, is nowhere close to the back he is now.
That's it. That's what I love about this game. Is this game is a team sport all the way around. If you have a weak link just about anywhere, it's going to be noticeable, and you're not going to be able to hide it. You know, so you have to have a fully, cohesive team. Millie says, JR, I was watching some of that Michael Wilson out of Stanford. I like that dude. I'm kind of torn between Dell, Tillman, Mingo, and Wilson. I think we'll probably land one of them. Yeah, I really liked Wilson. Like, he had some injury history in college, and also some inconsistent quarterback play. But what I saw down there at the Senior Bowl, really liked Michael Wilson. He had really good, like, reps, like, consistently, and then, showed up in the 7-on-7s and 11-on-11s. So I wouldn't be upset with Michael Wilson. And I also wouldn't be upset with Jonathan Mingo. Like, Mingo yeah. really gives me some people say A.J. Brown vibes. I don't know if I necessarily get A.J. Brown vibes, but it's that type of receiver, Smith having A.J. Brown for a few years, you definitely could probably, see him taking a look at Mingo. And I really like what I saw from Mingo down there at the Senior Bowl and his tape.
Yeah, the biggest problem I have, like, as I've gone through and done some mock drafts over the last few weeks, and I get to, like, the third or fourth round, I'm looking like, okay, what wide receivers are available? The guys that are there are, like, the Tyler Scotts, the Tank Dells. Right. Those guys are super fast, super speedy guys. If that's really, problem is, all those guys are super tiny.
Yeah, they're little.
All those guys are like 5'10", 5'11", 5', like maybe 6 foot, and they're all like 177.
Yep.
180.
Yeah, they're little dudes. They're fast, but they're little. But like, Mingo's got some size to him. Wilson's got some pretty good size to him. Jaden Reed's got some pretty good size to him. I feel like we're going to come out. Yeah, A.T. Perry's got some size to him. So I think we're going to come away with one of those guys for sure.
I wouldn't be mad at Jalen Hyatt or Jonathan Mingo. Either one of those guys I'd be good with, because they're both bigger guys. They both have the speed. They both have the at least with Mingo, we know he's got some really good body control.
Mingo does have some very good body control.
Like, I feel like those guys, while they may not have been asked to do it a lot in college, would probably be just fine doing, like, run blocking stuff if for the reason that they've just got bigger bodies.
Right.
They could at least just get in the way of somebody.
Which is one of my main issues with A.T. Perry is, he doesn't even give a thought to run blocking.
Yeah.
Which that's going to be a problem. He would have to do. But I kind of agree with Damski here. He says this draft is effed, to be honest. He's, I can't get a good beat on where we're after, like, or who we're after. That much is for sure. Like, I've been, as we're getting closer to it, I've been trying to keep an eye on some of the guys, like Daniel Jeremiah, who tends to do his mocks based off of what he's hearing. Like, he was one of the only ones that had us mocked at taking a wide receiver last year around this time, about a week out. So he's been bouncing back and forth between Lucas Van Ness and Christian Gonzalez. And then we keep hearing that they're really high on Nolan Smith because of his character, like in the intangibles, the leadership, that kind of stuff. So they finally did have Jalen Carter in on a visit. So for all the people that were, wondering about you know, Jalen Carter. They did have him as a visit. I think if he's there at eight, I think they would take him. I would hope that they would take him. It is all over the place. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that there is no, like, clear-cut dominant force in this draft, which is odd. You know, outside of your – everybody pretty much knows that you're going to have anywhere from three to four quarterbacks going in the first round or the first, like, top 10. But, like, outside of those guys, like, there's no super dominant edge rusher like there normally is. There's, like, your really dominant guys are, like, Jalen Carter and Bijan Robinson. And, like, you don't have an over-the-top wide receiver that everybody's clamoring for. There's no, like, super dominant offensive lineman. Like, Paris Johnson Jr. is, like, a good, you know, a well-built, well-put-together lineman along with Skoronski. It's kind of all over the place. Plus, you add in what we've been able to do offseason-wise and who we have added. Like, outside of adding, like, we just, what, Greenridge?
Yeah, Greenidge
or something like
that. Yeah, Greenidge, so, I think.
Yeah, we just signed him who played 15 games for the Saints. He could play, I think, tackle or guard.
Yep.
So that still doesn't, like, scream, oh, okay, here's our answer at left guard.
Yep.
So I kind of almost wish they'd come out and be like, oh, man, we're really confident in, even if it was, I'd hate it, but even if it was Mayfield. But the fact that they haven't really talked about the left guard position really at all, like, leads me really, like, confused about, okay, is right now that seems to be the biggest, like, hole, so to speak, you know, going into this draft is a left guard and maybe another linebacker. I don't know.
Yeah. I think the biggest reason is up to this point, especially last couple of years,
don't hurt yourself, John.
You got a show to do tomorrow, so you
that's right. That's right.
Do that.
Yeah, like,
but I think if we go back to with the Dimitroff era, and then even before that, you know, a lot of times we were the traditional, like, we're drafting the best player available, but the best player available for our needs.
Yeah, that we right? need. The best player we need.
Right. So if whenever your front office is drafting that way, and then you can look at free agency and see, like, okay, we shored up here. We didn't shore up these places because we're expecting to draft these guys, or we're hoping to draft these guys in this area. Because they have come out and said, we're BPA in the draft, we fill our needs in free agency, and we're BPA in the draft. And they have stuck to that to this point.
Yep.
Right? Because of that, everybody looks and says, like, oh, well, you know, this guy is, you know, you don't take this guy at that.
At that position. You don't take this at that number.
Right. But for them, they don't care. They look at their board and say, okay, who's the – on our board of the guys that are available, who's the best available player that we can get right now? And, you know, there's probably guys that are very close, and then they have to make a decision between those guys. But I'm sure by draft day, they have it very clearly, like, okay, this doesn't mean that they immediately go to the podium. They may wait and see, does anybody call? Does anybody want to trade? Right. Does anybody want to – or maybe they're calling people that have reached out to them about trades, and they want to see, like, you know,
You talk about that. You know, Bliss says, since everyone's undecided, trade back and get Branch. Grant is meh. I'll leave the Grant is meh part alone. What I want to talk about is the trade back. Everybody's like, well, just trade back. Okay, if you were in the trade back camp, you better hope and pray that a high-touted quarterback is sitting there at eight. Because yep. That's about the only way that you're going to get somebody to move up to eight. So you better hope a C.J. Stroud is sitting there. or a Will Levis is sitting there, or an Anthony Richardson is sitting there, and somebody wants to jump somebody else. Yep. Like if it's the Commanders wanting to jump the Titans or whatever, like that's the only way that you're going, like, because there ain't really nobody else. Anybody else that might be sitting there at eight that somebody's just got to have, we would more than likely take. And I'm thinking of a Jalen Carter. Like, because outside of him, I don't see anybody coming up for a Christian Gonzalez. I don't see anybody coming up for Devon Witherspoon or Joey Porter or Skoronski. You see what I'm saying? Like, outside of one of the premium positions, which is quarterback or a guy who is going after a quarterback, like, that's the only way I see anybody coming up.
Yep. And I saw somebody else had a mock today where they had us moving up to three to get Stroud. Because they said Bryce Young went first, Will Anderson went second.
Right.
And then CJ Stroud went third to the Falcons. And I'm in my brain, I'm thinking, okay, I think the trade could happen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
If they are absolutely in love with and have to have a guy like either Jalen Carter, Tyree Wilson, you know, I would say those are the two guys right now that if they were going to trade up for, those are the two guys that they're looking to grab, or one of those two guys are looking to grab. And for my money right now, like, if I move to three, I'm moving to three to probably pick Tyree Wilson. Like that's what, like, if the trade happens, I want it to happen for Tyree.
Like, I see, I guess
I,
I'm,
I hope he fall. I hope he falls to eight.
Right.
I want to have to go there.
I but think if
the trade does happen, that's who I hope we were picking
up. I think if you move from eight to three, if you move up five spots, I don't know what the table compensation for that would be, but we're going to go ahead and assume it's a first for next year. Like, you're going to go ahead and assume it's a first, like, you're swapping first. It's a first next year, maybe one of the fourths this year. Then
I think what I saw today in their mock draft, they were giving up, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But they gave up, they obviously swapped first, gave up a fourth this year, and a third this year and a fourth next year.
That might be, like, if we don't have to give up another first, that might be doable. But if we move up, to me, the only two scenarios that I can really see is Jalen Carter or CJ Stroud. Like, I get you what you're saying with Tyree Wilson. But, like, to me, there's a difference in grabbing, like, in sitting at one that Jacksonville was at last year and betting on a traits guy, mm-hmm. then trading up and taking a traits guy, like giving up assets to get a traits guy. Yeah. Like, that would, I ain't gonna lie, that would make me, that would take a little bit of shine off of, like, how shiny Fontenot is right now. You know, to me, like, I wouldn't be mad at all. It would almost, obviously not asset wise, but it would almost feel like the Julio Jones, like moving up to grab Julio, you know, type deal. But I think if you're going to bet on traits guy in that aspect, I'm kind of with Chris here. You know, stick at eight and get Van Ness, you know, because Van Ness is a traits guy, right?
Yeah, I love Van Ness. Like, he, just looking at him when he plays, he reminds me, he's not as polished coming out. But yeah. He just and maybe it's just because he's in the black and yellow of Iowa. But he flat out reminds me of, like, a TJ Watt type of guy. That's what he reminds me of.
Well, TJ, TJ Watt, you know, he was that more, like, off, like, fireball off the edge. Like, what is Van Ness is like, he's a power, you know, guy who could, he's more of that, like, you know, I'm trying to think of like, I keep wanting to say AJ Epenesa, and that's only because Epenesa came from Iowa and he was a similar type, you know, pass rusher. He's got a good, like, first step, very, like, powerful hands, you know, just a strong, but it's like for him right now, it's like bull rush or nothing, you know, with Van Ness. He would have to, he's going to have to learn some moves. Bliss says, what position slash player would the Falcons trade back into the first round for? Back into the first.
I think if they trade back into the first, my thought is they picked up either an edge or they picked up Skoronski, and then they move back into either try to get Bijan if he falls that far enough, or Jahmyr Gibbs. I think those are the two.
Now, I could see, I could see them moving back up maybe to get Gibbs, or if for whatever reason Robinson's there. I don't think Robinson makes it out of the teens myself. But I think the more interesting question would be who would they trade down for? And I think that's when you get into the conversations of the Nolan Smiths, Bijan Robinson, even JSN, Jackson Nigma out of Iowa, you know, not Iowa, Ohio. Dempsey's going to lose his mind if he doesn't say that. Ohio. I think those would be the trade back targets, you know. But like trading back into the first would have to be somebody like a Robinson or a Gibbs if you don't think he's going to be there by the second round, right? Let's see.
Then again, their trade back target might be a Skoronski or Paris Johnson or something.
Right. Like or a Paris Johnson, if you could pick up an extra third. Yeah. Because right now you have, your first five picks come in the first four rounds, and then you don't pick again until the seventh round, which is at 224 and 225, I think. So you don't have anything in the fifth or sixth rounds at all. So I could see them making a trade back, especially in like the second or third, and trying to pick up a, you know, fifth or sixth round. I think that could be, you know, a possibility. I'd be interested to see if they do actually pull off a trade down in the first. We haven't seen that. I can't even remember the last time we did trade down in the first.
Only thing I've ever seen us do in the first is trade up.
Right.
And that was under Dimitroff. Dimitroff never traded later in the draft. Yeah, we may have done it.
Right.
First round, we never traded back. We always traded up.
But now,
we were going to get a guy that we really liked.
Like we got Richie Grant on a trade down. You know, like because the pick that we traded out of was the Javonte Williams running back pick. So, you know, like Fontenot has shown, but he's also shown that he'll trade up because you traded up in the second round to get Ebiketie. Yeah. What are you betting $200 on? Oh, okay. I see it now. He says Casey Hayward is not going to be starting when September rolls around. Who are you betting $200 with, huh? And what's your idea of starting? We got to get some parameters on this $200.
What kind of odds are we getting?
That's right. That's right. What's the odds? Willie Doc, we appreciate you. Hold on, Willie. I got something.
Yeah,
for you.
I got it.
Go, go, go. I'm moving. There you go. Willie says, great conversation. I have no idea what Terry Fontenot will do. None of us do. And that's what's making this fun is that we could go, like this team could go so many different directions that we have no clue what this regime is going to do, especially not at eight. Yeah. Now, once you get past eight, I can easily see them taking like Cody Maw in the second round. I can easily see him taking Felix something Uzmaza, you know, the edge rusher out of Kansas State in the second round. I can see him taking Derek Hall in the third. You know what I mean? I could go through and tell you guys outside of the first round that I could easily see being a Falcon. But that first round right now is just like, it's hard for me to nail down. It's hard for me to pick.
But, 'cause like you said, there's just, at once you get past the top, once you get past the quarterbacks and, you know, the obvious guys that are going to go, my guess would be Will Anderson and Jalen Carter will be gone in the first five, no more than six picks. Right. Be my guess.
Okay. Right.
Then the next big guy is Tyree Wilson or Devin Witherspoon or Christian Gonzalez. Those are kind of the next big guys would be my guess. So let's say all four quarterbacks and Jalen Carter and Will Anderson are gone within the first six picks. We're now at pick seven. That means Tyree Wilson is still there. Devin Witherspoon is still there. Christian Gonzalez is still there. Bijan Robinson is still there. Whoever else you want to – Skoronski, Paris Johnson, Broderick Jones. You know, you got all these guys that are still there. And, like, none of them stand – I will say none of them, by and large, in most minds. I will say Tyree Wilson, especially at eight, is home run. Go get him personally. Because I look at this kid, and he's, like, just this much away. Like he just needs like another move, just right. One. Like, but otherwise, the guy's got the size, he's got the speed, he's got the length, he's got pass rush moves, but he probably just needs like a little more refinement on it. But he is this close to being like super crazy dominant, and so especially if, like I said, I don't want to have to go to three to get him. But you know, if we do go up to three, I could see that being the man they go to get.
Yeah.
If we can get him at eight, I think that is absolutely the way to go. Cause that's, you know, I think Jalen Carter is going to be gone by then.
Atlanta Braves 27 says, I'm excited no matter what. I've heard the media talk a lot about the Falcons lately being a sleeper team. The NFC is wide open. If we nail this pick, watch out. I think that's kind of the bigger, like, the more enjoyable thing right at the moment is that the NFC South is wide open. Like, even if the Panthers grab Bryce Young at number one and whoever, like, he's not going to hit the ground running. Hardly any quarterback ever does. So the next year or two, we have the perfect opportunity to grab, you know, the NFC South and make it ours for a few years for sure. Especially, you know, if we get a head start on our rebuild, as far as like, you know, if Ritter can come in and truly be the guy. You want to hit that first star for me, Jonathan? I got the air horn ready. Yep. Fred, we appreciate you greatly, brother. He says Carter or Nolan are who I think they want. I think I'll put it to you like this, Fred. In a trade-up scenario, Carter's your guy. In a trade-back scenario, Nolan's your guy. If you want to, like, look at it that way. If you want to – do you want to add anything to that, or we can move on to the next one?
No, I absolutely think that – I think Carter is a guy that they would like to have. Do I think that he's going to be there at eight? No. Do I think that if they do trade up to three, he's a possibility? Absolutely. And then Nolan, everybody said, you know, the traditional wisdom is he shouldn't be the pick at eight. But again, at the end of the day, if they look on their board and they say, this is the guy, this is the best player available on our board, and we have a chance to pick him at eight, they're going to pick him at eight. They're not going to trade back and hope that he makes it there.
Right. No, you're right about that. Yeah, they're confident on it. And again, if Nolan's the guy, I'll be pumped, you know? So.
All right.
Next one up.
And you ready for the air horn?
Yep. Bam.
Hey, Willie, thank you again.
Appreciate that, bro. He says, best guess why Carter would fall to eight. I doubt it. Character concerns would be the only reason. That is legitimately the only reason why he would fall past eight. I don't see him making it past Seattle. Like
the
And if he makes it past Seattle, he ain't making it past Detroit.
I've talked about this before, and I actually think this could be a potential
He's not wrong.
At that game. At that game. That was an awesome game. It was me and my brother. We had, I'll get back to my point in a second, but we had upper deck seats, front row, upper deck, 50 yard line. Perfect view of the entire field. Like the best outside of like suites, you know, like a field level, like right up on it, that, you know, club level seating and stuff like that. But like that was the best view I've ever had at a football game. It was almost like watching it on TV.
Right.
I have wanted to get seats like that every single time I've gone to look at going back to a football game, but they were way too expensive. And I was given those, so I didn't have to pay for those. But my, you know, the character concerns I could absolutely see, and I could also see potentially, and this could also be potentially for a guy like a Jalin Hyatt, because if you go and watch right now, if you go to YouTube and go Jalin Hyatt touchdowns or Jalin Hyatt highlights or whatever,
right?
Like for whatever reason, either because he's just that good or the scheme was super crazy, which it was, you go watch this guy. Every single time this guy's making a play, he's wide open. There's nobody around.
Yeah.
There's nobody within like 5, sometimes even 10 yards. He's just out running by himself. And you're like, what in the heck? This is like the guy. This is the guy you don't want to beat you. And he's that wide
open. He's either that good or he's getting schemed wide open.
Exactly. But when you see a guy have that easy of a time, the majority of the time outside of games against Georgia and some of the better teams. But when you see him getting that wide open that often, how often does this guy have to battle adversity? Right. Same thing with Jalin Carter. How often does this guy is so physically gifted? I actually like from a physicality and just flat out at athlete, just football player. I think he's the most gifted player in the draft, but that can be a good thing. That can be a great thing. That could also be a bad thing if the guy literally has never had to really battle adversity his entire career to this point, where no matter who lines up against him, he's just like, I don't have to think about it. I don't have to strategize about it. I'm bigger, stronger, faster than these guys, and I'm just going to do it. And I'm by him, and it happens, and it works every single time. And then you get to the NFL, and you can't just
It just don't work.
You know, you got to actually work at it. Can he do that?
The question. Tony Wright says, JR, what about left guard center Steve Avila in the second round? If we go defense, Tyree Wilson in the first. Avila is a natural left guard, could play. That's what I'm talking about. Past the first round, it is littered with guys like Avila. It's guys like Cody Maul, guys like McClendon Curtis, guys like Brogdon out of Syracuse. I mean, there are guys that can step in and, you know, be that starter day one or be the eventual starter. So, like, past that, you could throw at me just about any handful of names, and I'm like, yeah, man, that sounds great, because there are a lot of, like, really solid guys. Like, this is a type of draft that you really build, like, the depth and core of your team with. It's just this first round is just – interesting to try to nail, and it has a lot to do with the fact that this regime has been very good at keeping their, you know, cards close to their chest, which just means y'all are gonna have to join us draft night so we can all like freak out together and you know talk about it one way or the other, and also talk about joining folks the tomorrow night. If for any of y'all who check out the Out of Your Falcon Mind podcast on YouTube or whatever, they're having their 100th episode. Jonathan, I think you're going to be on, aren't you?
Yes, sir. I'm going to be on earlier in the show, like 7:15-ish, somewhere in that range. So I'll be on just chatting with the guys and talking about whatever we need to talk about.
And I'm going to
come on by and say hi.
Yeah, I'm going to try to hop on around like 9 or so, you know, after I get done with in between church and going to pick up my no, I don't have to pick up my brother. That's right. He's off tomorrow. Sweet. So, yeah, I should be out on the later end of it. So hopefully y'all will stop by. Yeah, I agree. Carter is not falling to the Falcons.
That's what I meant to put up there.
Yes, exactly. But no, I hope y'all do stop by, because the guys over there, John and Mike, are an absolute joy to talk to. Mike is a national treasure that should be guarded. And I love the TikTok videos and all the stuff that they put up, and just real good guys. And so if y'all haven't checked them out, we highly recommend that y'all do check them out. And if you have checked them out, then hopefully y'all be there tomorrow night.
Yeah.
A few more questions and we're going to start wrapping this thing up. Let's see here. King says, okay, so if our first round is more than likely defense, so we give Ritter more help. Do we give Ritter more help with the O-line or receiver? Because that's the only spots I'm really worried about for Ritter needing help. I think if I had to choose out of those two, I would probably pick O-line in the second round. Like if we go defense first round, give me, you know, Steve Avila, give me Cody Maul, give me somebody like that to solidify that offensive line, to give Ritter as much time as possible. So that's where I'm at. Jonathan, are you about the same?
Yeah. Yeah. If you do go Tyree Wilson, Nolan Smith, you know, whatever, trade back, sticking at eight, whatever. If you go defense, I think you go offensive line for the simple fact that I think the offensive line will give you greater dividends in the long run than just adding one more weapon to what, honestly, if things pan out the way it looks on paper, we've already got plenty of weapons. I'm not saying we're not going to add any more in the draft, but at two, yeah, like you said, the guys like Cody Maul, Avila, those guys, they're not going to be there past the second, I don't think. There's probably going to be a run on those guards at some point. Hopefully not before we get there. But
yeah, hopefully not. Hopefully we'll do like we did last year and kick off the run maybe.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
I agree with Chris. He said there's some good weapons in the third and fourth round. Yes, I think there are. Like I said, Jaden Reed, Michael Wilson, Jonathan Mingo, Tank Dell. Like those are some guys who are going to be there in the third or fourth round. So that's just on the wide receiver front. Like I'm not even talking about freaking running backs. Like there are Zach Chardonnay, there's Tank Bigsby, there's Zach Evans, there's,
I mean, dude, there's even, a ton. Even farther back, like one of the guys that I'm like sneakily like really into. For two reasons. One, he's really good. And two, he's like doesn't have a ton of tread on his tires because of who he's been playing behind. And that's Roshan Johnson, I think it is.
That's it, Roshan Johnson, Bijan's backup.
Yeah, that like, dude, yeah. He's had less than 100 carries every year he's been at Texas, but he has produced. He's not as fast. I think he's somewhere in the Algier range, maybe a little bit faster. But he's, you know, the same kind of big back that Algier is. So if your philosophy in the run game is, I want to pound you, and then I'm going to bring in my backup, and then he's going to pound you, then I'm going to bring in my other guy, yep, and then he's going to, and we're just going to keep hitting you with body blows all day long. That's a guy that's sneakily, like, I think in a lot of drafts I see him, he's like ranked like 125th.
Oh, yeah.
Like yep. He's like fourth, fifth round. So maybe you do trade back in the first, get you an extra fifth, somewhere in that range, or an extra four. So you gotta have three fourths, and you get a guy that maybe, you know, a lot of people are thinking he goes in the fifth round, but you get him in the
fourth. You grab him in the fourth because you got extras. Exactly.
Exactly.
Millie says, like, you know, don't forget about Tillman. Exactly. That's a guy that you could throw in there. Chris, yeah, talking about one of my personal favorites, the running back from Pitt, Israel Abandikanda. Like you talk about a almost upgraded version of Tevin Coleman, that one cut go. He's got speed for days. Tony Rice, you know, Tajay Spears, Keaton Mitchell. Exactly. So I think weapons are going to be had in the third and fourth round. So I would love to see an offensive lineman.
I think Tajay Spears to me, and I mean, it's kind of hard for him not to be because, you know, Tajay Spears has been doing it for a while, whereas Avery Williams has not, but he's basically like an upgraded Avery Williams.
Oh, yeah.
Like he's a smaller back. But he's that guy that you want to get out in the flats, get him out in some space, let him do his thing, and then burn through, just burn up the grass at his feet. That's what you want him to do.
Willie, we appreciate you greatly.
Absolutely.
He says, could you see TF, could TFC passing Bijan as a passing target, number four or wide receiver two? Yeah, I like he very well could be. That's part of the, what I keep talking about with if you end up with Bijan, is you can't view him as just a back. He's going to be, a offensive weapon all the way around. So
I think, and I think we did this in one of our drafts, one of our mock drafts. I think, like, if you take Bijan in the first, I think in the second, you probably, personally, I may be thinking, because I'm not sure if he's going to be there in the third, but like Yaya Dobby.
Yaya Dobby, yeah, for sure.
Getting him in the second, go try to find another either corner, safety, what have you, in the third. And then in the fourth, if he's still there, I personally would be down for like a Voorhees. I know he's injured. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Bring that guy.
Stash that guy in. Yep.
Yeah, stash him. And then you just make do with your Mayfield, your Hennessy, I think, is gone, isn't he?
No, Hennessy's still on the roster.
Okay. So make do with Hennessy, make do with Mayfield, whoever wins that. And then you come back next year and you bring in Voorhees, and that guy's going to nail down that left guard slot.
Oh, yeah. I would take that all day. All day. Well, man, I think we have done it. We've done it quite a bit. We've done it for 1 hour and 23 minutes. I almost said 123 minutes. That's not right.
83 minutes.
So, anyway, we appreciate y'all greatly. As always, keep an eye on the channel. This weekend, we will have out Saturday, will be our pound-for-pound official mock draft. So, make sure you tune in for that as me and Jonathan will battle back and forth and slug it out about who we think the Falcons are actually going to take, and we're going to do a full mock draft. What's up, bro?
Two men enter, one man leave.
Yeah, it's me. Yeah, because I'll just hang up on you.
I know where you live, man.
That's right. anyway, so like I said, keep your eye on the channel because we're always just trying to bring y'all the fun stuff that hopefully y'all enjoy. As always, we'll be live next Tuesday, I think. We'll have a conversation about that because I know next week's the draft. We're going to be doing a lot of streaming. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, we'll definitely see y'all this weekend on a recorded show, possibly on Tuesday. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Grimm1128, GRIMM1128. Jonathan?
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by, say hi. And also come by, say hi again tomorrow. The Out of Your Falcon Mind podcast.
Yep.
Come by, say hey, chat with us, and we'll have a good time.
Yes, sir. And as always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up.